Great Plays.
Gentlemen, the fortune be no farther. For how firmly I might resolve, you know. That is, not to bestow my youngest daughter before I have a husband for the elder. If either of you both love Katharina, because I know you well and love you well, leave shall you have to court her at your pleasure.
To court her, rather. She's too rough for me. There, Hortensio. Will you anyway?
I pray you, sir, is it your will to make a stale of me among these mates?
Mates, maid? How mean you that? No mates for you unless you were of gentler, milder mold.
Faith, sir, you shall never need to fear. I wish it is not halfway to her heart. But if it were, doth not her care should be to comb your noddle with a three-legged stool and paint your face and use you like a fool?
From all such devils, good Lord, deliver us.
And me too, good Lord.
This afternoon, NBC presents the seventh performance of its Great Play series for 1941-1942, William Shakespeare's The Taming of the Shrew, adapted for radio by Randall R. McDougall. To tell you something of the story behind today's Great Play and each play of this series, we have been fortunate in enlisting the services of Barrett H. Clark, author of several books and standard texts, and at present, executive director of the Dramatists' Play Service. We ask him now to introduce our production of The Taming of the Shrew. Mr. Clark.
One of the many amazing things about the work of Shakespeare is that no matter how well we may think we know it, we are always finding something new and surprising. Each rereading of one of the tragedies, each performance scene of Hamlet or Macbeth, reaffirming what we had already known, yet adds something that we had somehow missed the time before. And each reinterpretation of one of the comedies amazes us by its essential vigor and freshness. Today, we broadcast one of the early comedies, the ever-popular and appealing Taming of the Shrew, one of the gayest and sprightliest of the poet's works, a play which in its own ingratiating way has probably attracted more audiences during the more than three centuries of its existence than any other of Shakespeare's comedies. Because there necessarily exists a close connection between Shakespeare's life and his work, I'm going to give you a brief who's who of the man and then add my own modest postscript to the mass of critical commentary. But first, the biography. There is little doubt that he was born in the town of Stratford-on-Avon in England on or about April 23rd, 1564. We suppose, but we are not positive, that he attended grammar school in his native village and received what we may assume was a pretty good education. He is said to have got into a scrape with a local dignitary as a result of poaching on his hunting preserves. Though the evidence is not entirely clear, it is probable that at the age of 18 he married a woman 8 years his senior, one Anne Hathaway. The couple were blessed with three children, one of whom survived her parents by several years. It is likely that Shakespeare became associated with the theater as early as 1592, and we are sure that during the 90s he was an actor, playing, among other minor roles, that of the ghost in a play of his own authorship, which under the title of Hamlet achieved some success in its day and came to be rather highly thought of by succeeding generations of playgoers. It is a generally accepted fact that beginning with the early 1590s and during the rest of the playwright's life, he wrote at least 37 and possibly more plays. He seems to have been a shrewd businessman, earning enough money to buy various odds and ends of real estate, including the finest house and farm in Stratford, to which he retired 6 years before his death. He acquired a coat of arms, was called Mr., and in spite of his questionable past as a mere player, was entitled to be known as a gentleman. He died at Stratford, April 23rd, 1616. His rather considerable property was left to members of the immediate family. Though his wife was presumably taken care of before he made his will, there is a curious provision in that document which has caused no end of speculation as to the relationship between the poet and Mistress Anne. The passage referred to is that in which he bequeathed to her the second best bed. Now, The Taming of the Shrew was first produced in 1594, sometime after the young author had left home and gone to London, and his wife was not with him. At least there is no evidence that she was. And there is a legend that Anne herself was something of a shrew. Most writers choose the material that interests them, and the psychoanalyst tells us that often what a man thinks and dreams and writes expresses a wish contrary to fact, a suppressed desire. Remember that Shakespeare was married at the age of 18 to a woman 8 years older than he, that he spent most of his adult life away from home, and finally that his wife had been remembered in the will to the extent of a second-best bed and certain other furniture. Is it entirely fantastic to imagine that the young husband should attempt in The Taming of the Shrew to express himself freely at a safe distance from home, and put into the mouth of his chief character that speech in which she lectures the other wives, telling them that thy husband is thy lord, thy life, thy keeper, thy head, thy sovereign? I have examined Catherine's speech word for word and find no hint of irony in it. But I can't help wondering whether the lady's submission was as complete as it sounds. But it is one of the delights of hearing The Taming of the Shrew that we contemporary skeptics are given a chance to speculate on the genuineness of Catherine's conversion. 'Tis a wonder, comments Lucentio, she will be tamed so. It is indeed. But enough of commentary and speculation. We are now ready for the really important part of our program, the play itself.
Gentlemen, content ye, I am resolved. Go in, Bianca. And for I know she taketh most delight in music, instruments, and poetry, schoolmasters will I keep within my house, fit to instruct her youth. If you, Hortensio, or Signor Ramio, you know any such, prefer them hither. For to cunning men I will be very kind, and liberal to mine own children in good bringing up. And so, farewell.
Farewell. Yet for the love I bear my sweet Bianca, if I can be any means light on a fit man to teach her that wherein she delights, I will wish him to her father. What say you, Hortensio?
So will I, Signor Ramio. But a word, I pray.
Eh?
We may yet again have access to our fair mistress and be happy rivals in Bianca's love if we labor and effect one thing specially.
What's that, I pray?
Marries her to get a husband for her sister, Katharina.
A husband? A devil.
I say a husband.
I say a devil. Thinkest thou, Hortensio, though her father be very rich, any man is so very a fool to be married to hell?
Tush, tush, Ramio, though it pass your patience and mine to endure her loud alarums. Why, man, there be good fellows in the world, and a man could light on them, would take her with all her faults, and money enough.
I cannot tell. But I had his leave take a dowry with this condition, to be whipped at the High Cross every morning.
Faith, as you say, there's small choice in rotten apples. But come, this makes us friends, till by helping Baptista's eldest daughter to a husband, we set his youngest free for a husband. Ah, sweet Bianca. Happy man be his dole. He that runs fastest gets the ring. How say you, Signor Ramio?
I am agreed. And as to Katharina, would I had given him the best horse in Padua to begin his wooing that would thoroughly woo her, wed her, bed her, and rid the house of her. Farewell,
farewell.
Ellen, I say, knock me at the skate and wrap me well, or I'll knock your knave's pate.
My master's grown coarse, and I should knock you first, and then I know after who comes by the worst.
Will it not be? Faith, sinner, and you'll not knock, I'll ring it.
Oh, sing it. Oh, help, masters, help. My master's mad.
Now knock, will it bid you, sinner balloon.
How now? What's the matter? What, my old friend Grumio and my good friend Petruchio. How do you all at Verona?
Signor Hortensio, come you to part the fray?
Rise, Grumio, rise. What is this dreadful quarrel?
If this be not a lawful cause for me to leave his service, look you, sir. Bid me knock him and wrap him soundly, sir. Well, was it fit for a servant to use his master so? Whom would the god I had well knocked it first, and had not Grumio come by the worst?
Thou senseless villain, good Hortensio, I bade the rascal knock upon your gate, and could not get him for my heart to do it.
Knock at the gate? Oh, heaven, spake you not these words plain, sir? Knock me here, wrap me here, knock me well, knock me soundly. And then come you now with knocking at the gate. I don't
know. Sirrah, be gone or talk not, I advise you.
Petruchio, patience. I am Grumio's pledge. And tell me now, sweet friend, what happy gale blows you to Padua here from old Verona?
Such wind scatters young men through the world to seek their fortunes farther than at home.
Hmm?
Antonio, my father, is deceased, and I have thrust myself into his maze happily to wive and thrive as best I may. Crowns in my purse I have, and goods at home. And so am come abroad to see the world.
I can Petruchio help thee to a wife with wealth enough and young and beauteous, brought up as best becomes a gentlewoman? Her only fault, and that is fault enough, is that she is intolerable cursed and shrewd and froward so beyond all measure that were my state far worse than it is, I would not wed her for a mine of gold.
Oh, Hortensio, peace. Thou know'st not gold's effect. Tell me your father's name, and 'tis enough. for I will board her, though she chide as loud as thunder when the clouds in autumn crack.
Her father is Baptista Minola, an affable and courteous gentleman. Her name is Caterina Minola, renowned in Padua for her scolding tongue.
I know her father, though I know not her, and he knew my deceased father well. I will not sleep, Hortensio, till I see her.
Tarry, Petruchio, I must go with thee, for in Baptista's keep my treasure is. He hath the jewel of my life in hold, his youngest daughter, beautiful Bianca. Therefore, this order hath Baptista ta'en, that none shall have access unto Bianca till Catherine the Cursed have got a husband.
Catherine the Cursed? A title for a maid of all titles of earth. Oh, my masters, tarry a while for me!
In the great reception hall of Baptista Minola, the gallants meet again a few hours later.
God save you, Signor Romeo.
And you are well met, Signor Hortensio. I promised to inquire carefully about a schoolmaster for the fair Bianca. And by good fortune, I have lighted well on this young man. For learning and behavior fit for her turn, well read in poetry.
Now, Romeo, tis now no time to vent our love. Here is a gentleman whom by chance I met, upon agreement from us to his liking, will undertake to woo cursed Catherine. Yea, and to marry her, if her dowry please.
So said, so done, tis well. Hortensio, have you told him all her faults?
I know she is an irksome, brawling scold. If that be all, masters, I hear no harm.
No, sayest me so, friend. What countryman?
Born in Verona, old Antonio's son. My father dead, my fortune lives for me. And I do hope good days and long to see.
Oh, sir, such a life with such a wife, 'twas strange. But if you have stomach, too, to God's name, you shall have me assisting you and all. But will you woo this wildcat?
Why came I hither but to that intent? Think you a little din can daunt mine ears? Have I not in my time heard lions roar? Have I not heard the sea puffed up with winds rage like an angry boar chafed with sweat? Have I not heard great ordnance in the field and heaven's artillery thunder in the skies? Have I not in a pitched battle heard loud laurens neighing steeds and trumpets clang? And do you tell me of a woman's tongue that gives not half so great a blow to the ear as will a chestnut in a farmer's fire? Tush, tush, fear boys with bugs and mice.
Oh, Tezio, hark. This gentleman is happily arrived, my mind presumes, for his own good and ours.
I promised we would be contributors and bear his charge of wooing whatsoever.
And so we will, provided that he win her. But who comes here?
Tis Baptista. Remember, sirs, Kate's for me. Let her go by.
I leave that labor to great Hercules.
Good morrow, neighbor Baptista.
Good morrow, neighbor Romeo. God save you, gentlemen.
And you, good sir. Pray, have you not a daughter called Catherine, fair and virtuous?
I have a daughter, sir, called Catherina.
You are too blunt. Go to it orderly.
You wrong me, Signor Romeo. Give me leave.
I'll give you leave and take my leave. If you will but pardon me, neighbor Baptista, I shall return anon.
My house is always yours, fair Romeo. And now, good sir.
I am a gentleman of Verona, sir, that hearing of her beauty and her wit, her affability and bashful modesty, her wondrous qualities and mild behavior, am bold to show myself a forward guest within your house, to make mine eye the witness of that report which I so oft have heard concerning a fairest Catherine. And for an entrance to my entertainment, I do present you with a man of mine.
Your servant, sir.
Cunning in music and the mathematics, to instruct her fully in those sciences, whereof I know she is not ignorant. Accept of him, or else you do me wrong. His name is Hortensio, born in Mantua.
You're welcome, sir, and he for your good sake. Take up the lute, Hortensio, and a set of books. You shall go see your pupils presently. Hola, within!
You call me, sir?
Sit up. Lead this gentleman to my daughters, and tell them both he is their tutor. Bid them use him well.
This way, and it please you, sir.
And now, signor, you are passing welcome. But for my daughter Catherine, this I know. She is not for you. The more my grief.
I see you do not mean to part with her, or else you like not of my company.
Oh, no, no, mistake me not. I speak but as I find. Whence are you, sir? What may I call your name?
Petruchio is my name, Antonio's son, a man well known throughout all Italy.
I know him well. You are welcome for his sake. But for my daughter...
Signor Baptista, my business asketh haste, and every day I cannot come to woo. You knew my father well, and in him me, left solely heir to all his lands and goods, which I have bettered rather than decreased. Then tell me, if I get your daughter's love, what dowry shall I have with her to wife?
Huh? Oh, after my death, the one half of my lands. And in possession, 20,000 crowns.
And for that dowry, I'll assure her of her widowhood, be it that she survive me, in all my lands and leases whatsoever. Let specialties be therefore drawn between us, that covenants may be kept on either hand.
Aye, when the special thing is well obtained. That is her love. For that is all in all.
Why, that is nothing, for I tell you, Father, I am as peremptory as she is proud-minded. And where two raging fires meet together, they do consume the thing that feeds their fury. Though little fires grow great with little wind, yet extreme gusts will blow out fire and all. So I to her, and so she yields to me. For I am rough and woo not like a babe.
Rex, come see!
Well mayst thou woo, and happy be thy speed. But be thou armed for some unhappy word.
Aye, to the proof, as mountains are for winds, that shake not though they blow perpetually.
Take thy loose with thee, rascal fiddler!
Oh, would I have remained in that
drawer? How now, my friend? Why dost thou look so pale?
Oh, for fear, I promise you, if I look pale.
What? Will my daughter prove a good musician?
I think she'll sooner prove a soldier. I and may hold with her, but never lutes.
Why then, thou canst not break her to the lute?
I know, for she hath broke the lute to me. I did but tell her she mistook her frets, and bowed her hand to teach her fingering, when with a most impatient, devilish spirit, "Frets call you these," quoth she, "I'll fume with them." And with that word she struck me on the head, and through the instrument my pate made way. And there I stood amazed for a while, as on a pillory, looking through the lute, while she did call me rascal, fiddler, and twangling jack, with 20 such vile terms as had she studied to misuse me so.
Oh, now, by the world, it is a lusty wench. I love her 10 times more than ere I did. Oh, how I long to have some chat with her.
Well, go with me, and be not so discomfited. Repair thy lute, and proceed in practice with my younger daughter. She's apt to learn, and thankful for good terms. Signor Petruchio, will you go with us, or shall I send my daughter Kate to you?
I pray you do. I will attend her here.
And woo her with some spirit when she comes. Say that she rail. Why, then, I'll tell her plain she sings as sweetly as a nightingale. Say that she frown, I'll say she looks as clear as morning roses, newly washed with dew. Say she be mute and will not speak a word. Why, then, I'll commend her volubility, and say she uttered piercing eloquence. If she do bid me pack, I'll give her thanks, as though she bid me stay by her a week. If she deny to wed, I'll crave the day when I shall ask the banns and when be married.
She twangling jack, I warrant his pate be aching for a 7th day.
Good morrow, Kate, for that your name I hear.
Well, have you heard? But something hard of hearing. They call me Catherine, that do speak of me.
You lie in faith, for you are called plain Kate and bonny Kate, and sometimes Kate the Cursed.
What?
But Kate, the prettiest Kate in Christendom, Kate of Kate Hall, my super dainty Kate, take this of me, Kate of my consolation. Hearing thy mildness praised in every town, thy virtue spoke of and thy beauty sounded, yet not so deeply as to thee belongs, myself am moved to woo thee for my wife.
Moved? In good time. Let him that moved you hither remove you hence.
Come, come, you wasp, befaith you are too angry.
If I be waspish, best beware my sting.
My remedy is then to pluck it out.
Aye, if the fool could find it where it lies.
Who knows not where a wasp does wear his sting? Good Kate, I am a gentleman.
That I'll try.
What? I swear I'll cuff you if you strike again.
So may you lose your arms. If you strike me, you are no gentleman. And if no gentleman, why then no arms.
Nay, come, Kate, come. You must not look so sour.
It is my fashion when I see a crab.
Why, here's no crab, and therefore look not sour.
There is, there is.
Then show it me.
Had I a glass, I would.
What? You mean my face?
Well aimed of such a young one.
Oh, now, by St. George, I am too young for you.
Yet you are withered.
Tis with care.
I cannot.
Nay, hear you, Kate, in sooth, you scape not so.
I chafe you if I tarry. Let me go.
No, not a whit. I find you passing gentle. Oh. 'Twas told me you were rough and coy and sullen. And now I find report a very liar. No. For thou art pleasant, gamesome, passing courteous, but slow in speech, yet sweet as springtime flowers. Thou canst not frown, thou canst not look askance, nor bite the lip as angry wenches will, nor hast thou pleasure to be cross and talk, but thou with mildness entertain'st thy wooers, with gentle conference, soft and affable. Oh, why does the world report that Kate doth limp?
Didst thou say limp? I, a groundless lie.
Oh, slanderous world. Kate, like the hazel twig, is straight and slender.
Let me go.
Brown in hue as hazelnuts, and sweeter than the kernel.
Oh, let me see thee walk.
Thou dost not hold. Ah, did ever Diane so become a grove as Kate this chamber with her princely gait?
Where did you study all this goodly speech?
It is extempore from my mother wit.
And therefore, setting all this chat aside, thus in plain terms, your father hath consented that you shall be my wife.
What?
Your dowry agreed on, and will you, nill you, I will marry you.
Oh.
Now, Kate, I am a husband for your turn, or by this light whereby I see thy beauty, that doth make me like thee well, thou must be married to no man but me, for I am he and born to tame you, Kate, and bring you from a wild Kate to a Kate conformable as other household Kates. Here comes your father. Never make denial. I must and will have Catherine to my wife.
Now, Signor Petruchio, how speed you with my daughter?
How but well, sir, how but well. Were impossible I should speed amiss.
Why, how now, daughter Catherine? In your dumps?
Call you me, daughter? Now I see you've showed a tender, fatherly regard to wish me wed to one half-lunatic. A madcap ruffian and a swearing jack that thinks with oaths to face the matter out.
Father, 'tis thus. Yourself and all the world that talked of her have talked amiss of her. If she be cursed, it is for policy. For she's not froward, but modest as the dove. She's not hot, but temperate as the morn. And to conclude, we have agreed so well together that upon Sunday is the wedding day.
I'll see thee hanged on Sunday first.
I tell you, 'tis incredible to believe how much she loves me. Oh, the kindest Kate, she hung about my neck, and kiss on kiss she vied so fast, protesting oath on oath, that in a twink she won me to her love.
Oh, give me thy hand,
no!
Kate. I will into Venice to buy apparel against the wedding day. Provide the feast, father, and bid the guests. I will be sure my Catherine shall be fine.
Let me go.
I know not what to say, but give me your hand. God send you joy, Petruchio. It is a match.
Father and wife, adieu. I will to Venice. Sunday comes apace. We will have rings and things and fine array. And kiss me, Kate.
No!
We will be married a Sunday.
Signor Hortensio, this is the point of day that Catherine and Petruchio should be married. And yet we hear not of our son-in-law. What will be said? What mockery will it be to want the bridegroom when the priest attends to speak the ceremonial rites of marriage? What says Hortensio to this shame of ours?
No shame but mine. I must, forsooth, be forced to give my hand opposed against my heart unto a mad brain Rudesby full of spleen, who wooed in haste and means to wed at leisure. I told you aye he was a frantic fool, hiding his bitter jests in blunt behavior. And to be noted for a merry man, he'll woo a thousand. Point the day of marriage, make feasts, invite friends, and proclaim the banns, yet never means to wed where he hath wooed. Now must the world point at poor Catherine and say, lo, there is mad Petruchio's wife. If it would please him, come and marry her.
Oh, patience, good Catherine, and Baptista too. Upon my life, Petruchio means but well. Whatever fortune stays him from his word. Though he be blunt, I know him passing wise. Though he be merry, yet withal he's honest.
Would Catherine had never seen him, though.
Go, girl. I cannot blame thee now to weep, for such an injury would vex a very saint. Much more a shrew of thy impatient humor.
Master, news, old news, and such news as you've never heard of.
Is it new and old, too? How can that be?
Why, is it not news to hear of Petruchio's coming?
But say, Biondello, what's thine old news?
Why, Petruchio is coming in a new hat and an old jerkin.
Yes.
A pair of breeches thrice turned.
Huh?
A pair of boots that have been candle cases.
What?
One buckled, another laced. An old rusty sword ta'en out of the town armory with a broken hilt and two broken points. His horse hipped with an old mothy saddle and stirrups of no kindred. Besides, ne'er leg before. And with a half-checked bit and a headstall of sheep's leather, a girth six times pieced, and a woman's crupper of velour, which hath two letters for her name fairly set down in studs, and here and there pierced with pack thread.
Who comes with him?
Oh, sir, his lackey, for all the world caparisoned like the horse, with a linen stock on one leg and a kersey boot hose on the other, gartered with a red and blue list. An old hat and the humor of 40 fancies pricked in it for a feather. A monster, a very monster in apparel, and not like a Christian footboy or a gentleman's lackey.
Hold the house!
Behold the bridegroom coming!
Tis some odd humor pricks him to this fashion.
Well, I'm glad he's come, howsoever he comes.
Come, come, where be these gallants? Who's at home?
You are welcome, sir.
And yet I come not well.
Not so well apparelled as I wish you were.
Were it better I should rush in thus. But where is Kate? Where is my lovely bride? How does my father?
Gentles, methinks you frown. And wherefore gaze this goodly company as if they saw some wondrous monument, some comet or unusual prodigy?
Why, sir, you know this is your wedding day. First, baby sad, fearing you would not come. Now sadder that you come so unprovided. An eyesore to our solemn festival.
And tell us, what occasion of import hath all so long detained you from your wife and sent you hither so unlike yourself?
Ah, tedious it were to tell and harsh to hear. Suffice it, I am come to keep my word. But where is Kate? I stay too long from her. The morning wears. 'Tis time we were to church.
See not your bride in these unreverent robes. Go to my chamber, put on clothes of mine.
Not I, believe me. Thus I'll visit her.
But thus I trust you will not marry her.
Good sooth, even thus. Therefore have done with words. To me she's married, not into my clothes. Could I repair what she will wear in me, as I can change these poor accoutrements? 'Twere well for Kate and better for myself.
Oh, but what a fool am I to chat with you when I should bid good morrow to my bride and seal the title with a lovely kiss. Behold, Katharina, the bridegroom cometh!
Oh, he hath some meaning in his mad attire. We will persuade him, be it possible.
Let's after him and see the event of this.
Signor Ramio, came you from the church?
As willingly as that I came from school.
And is the bride and bridegroom coming home?
A bridegroom, say you? 'Tis a groom indeed, a grumbling groom, and that the girl shall find.
Curser than she? Why, 'tis impossible.
Oh, he's a devil, a very fiend.
Why, she's a devil, a devil, a devil's dam.
Oh, touch, he's a lamb, a dove, a fool to him.
Hmm?
I'll tell you, Sir Hortensio, when the priest should ask if Catherine should be his wife, "Aye, by God's wounds," quoth he, and swore so loud that, all amazed, the priest let fall the book. And as he stooped again to pick it up, the mad-brained bridegroom took him such a cuff that down fell priest and book and brook and priest.
What said Catherine to all this?
It trembled and shook, for why, he stamped and swore as if the vicar meant to cousin him. But after many ceremonies done, he calls for wine. "Health," quoth he, as if he'd been aboard, carousing to his mates after a storm. Quaffed off the muscadel and threw the sops all in the sexton's face, having no other reason but that his beard grew thin and hungerly and seemed to ask him sops as he was drinking. This done, he took the bride about the neck and kissed her lips with such a clamorous smack that out the parting all the church did echo. And I, seeing this, came thence for very shame. And after me, I know the rout is coming. Such a mad marriage never was before. Hark, hark, I hear the minstrels play.
I know you think to dine with me today and have prepared great store of wedding cheer. But so it is, my haste doth call me hence. And therefore, here I mean to take my leave.
Is possible you will away tonight?
I must away today, before night comes. And honest company, I thank you all that have beheld me give away myself to this most patient, sweet, and virtuous wife. Dine with me, father, drink a health to me, for I must hence, and farewell to you all.
Let us entreat you stay till after dinner.
It may not be.
Let me entreat you.
It cannot be.
Let me entreat you.
I am content.
Are you content to stay?
I am content you shall entreat me stay. Not stay, entreat me how you can.
Now, if you love me, stay.
Groom me all, my horse.
Aye, sir, they be ready. The oats have eaten the horses.
Nay, then, do what thou canst. I will not go today. No, not tomorrow. Not till I please myself. The door is open, sir. There lies your way. You may be jogging whilst your boots are green. For me, I'll not be gone until I please myself. 'Tis like you will prove a jolly surly groom and take it on you at the first so roundly.
Oh, Kate, content thee, prithee, be not angry.
I will be angry. What hast thou to do?
Father,
be quiet. He shall stay my leisure.
Aye, Mary, now it begins to work.
Gentlemen, forward to the bridal dinner. I see a woman may be made a fool if she had not the spirit to resist.
They shall go forward, Kate, at thy command. Obey the bride, you that attend on her. Go to the feast, revel and domineer. Be mad and merry, or go hang yourself. But for my bonny Kate, she must with me.
Let me go.
Nay, look not so big, nor stamp, nor stare, nor fret. I will be master of what is mine own.
No.
She is my goods, my chattels. She is my house, my household stuff.
Father.
My field, my barn, my horse, my ox. My mules, my whatever.
Aye, and here she stands. Touch her, whoever dare. I'll bring mine axe on the proudest he that stops my way to Padua.
Stop me down!
Grumio, draw forth thy weapon. We are beset with thieves. Rescue thy mistress and bring her land. Well, fear not, sweet wench. They shall not touch thee, Kate. I'll buckle thee against dominion.
Nay, let them go. A couple of quiet ones.
Would thee not quickly, I should die with laughing. Of all mad matches, never was the like.
Mistress, what's your opinion of your sister?
But that being mad herself, she's madly mated.
I wanted him. Petruchio is cated.
Neighbors and friends, though bride and bridegroom wants Paul to supply the places at the table, you know there wants no junkets at the feast. Hortensio, you shall supply the bridegroom's place. And let Bianca take her sister's room.
Shall sweet Bianca practice how to bride it?
She shall, Hortensio. Come, gentlemen, let's go.
Aye, fie on all tired jades, and all mad masters in all foul ways. Was ever man so beaten, was ever man so arrayed, was ever man so weary? I am sent before to make a fire, and they're coming after to warm them. Now, were not I a little pot and soon hot, me very lips might freeze to me teeth and me tongue to the roof of me mouth. Me heart and me belly ere I should come by a fire to thaw me. But I was blowing the fire, shall warm myself. For considering the weather, a taller man than I will take cold. Hello! Curtis! Open!
Who is that called so coldly?
A piece of ice. Thou doubt it, thou mayst slide from my shoulder to my heel with no greater a run but my head and my neck. A fire, good Curtis.
Is my master and his wife coming, Grumio?
Oh, aye, Curtis, aye, and therefore fire, fire. Cast on no water.
Is she so hot a shrew as she's reported?
She was, good Curtis, before this frost, but thou knowest winter tames man, woman, and beast. For it hath tamed my old master and my new mistress and myself, fellow Curtis. But wilt thou make a fire, shall I complain on thee to our mistress, whose hand she being now at hand, thou shalt soon feel to thy cold comfort for being slow in thy hot office.
I prithee, good Grumio, tell me, how goes the world?
A cold world, Curtis, in every office but thine, and therefore fire.
Fire.
Do thy duty and have thy duty. For my master and mistress are almost frozen to death.
There's fire ready, and therefore, good Grumio, the news.
First, know my horse is tired. My master and my mistress fallen out.
Eh? How?
Out of their saddles into the dirt, and thereby hangs a tale.
Eh?
We came down a foul hill, my master riding behind my mistress.
Both on one horse?
What is that to thee?
Why, a horse.
Tell thou the tale. But hadst thou not crossed me, thou shouldst have heard how her horse fell, and she under her horse.
Huh?
Thou shouldst have heard in how miry a place, how she was besoiled, how he left her with a horse upon her. How he beat me because her horse stumbled, how she waded through the dirt to pluck him off me. How he swore, how she prayed that never prayed before. How I cried.
By this reckoning, he is more shrew than she.
Aye, and that thou and the proudest of you all shall find out when he comes home. But what talk I of this? Call forth Nathaniel, Joseph, Nicholas, Philip, Walter, Sugar Shop, and all the rest. Let their heads be slickly combed and their blue coats brushed and their garters of an indifferent knit. Let them curtsy with their left leg and not presume to touch a hair of my master's horse tail till they kiss their hands. Are they all ready?
Be these knaves! What, no man at all to hold my tenant to take my horse?
Oh.
Where is Nathaniel, Gregory, Philip? Here, sir. You loggerheaded and unpolished grooms! What, no attendance, nor a guard, no duty? Where is the foolish knave I sent before?
Here, sir, as foolish as I was before.
You peasant swain, you villainous malt horse drudge! Did I not bid thee meet me in the park and bring along these rascal knaves with thee?
Nathaniel's coat, sir, was not fully made, and Gabriel's pumps were all unpinked to the heel. There was no link to color Peter's hat, and Walter's dagger was not coming from the sheathing. There was none fine but Adam, Ralph, and Gregory. The rest were ragged, old, and beggarly. Yet, as they are, Here they come to meet you.
Go, rascals, go and fetch my supper in.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Where is the life that late I led? Where are those? Sit down, Kate, and welcome.
Soup! 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 Why, when, I say?
Nay, good sweet Kate, be merry.
Off with my boots, you rogues!
Yes, sir, yes.
It was the friar of orders gray as he forth walked on his way.
Out, you rogue, you pluck my foot awry. Take that and mend the plucking of the other.
Be merry, Kate.
Some water here. What ho! Where's my spaniel churlish? Sitter, get you hence and bid my cousin Ferdinand come hither.
One, Kate, that you must kiss and be acquainted with.
Where are my slippers? Shall I have some water?
Yes, sir.
Come, Kate, and wash, and welcome heartily.
Ah, you bawdy villain, will you let it fall?
Patience, I pray you, to the fault unwilling.
A bawdy, beetle-headed, flap-eared knave.
Yes, sir.
Come, Kate, sit down. I know you have a stomach. Will you give thanks, sweet Kate, or else shall I?
What's this, mutton?
I.
Who brought it?
I.
'Tis burnt, and so is all the meat. What dogs are these? Where is the rascal cook? How durst you villains bring it from the dresser and serve it thus to me that love it not? There, take it to you! Trenchers, cuffs and all! You heedless jolt heads and unmannered slaves! What, do you crumble? I'll be with you straight!
I pray you, husband, be not so disquiet. The meat was well, if you were so contented.
I tell thee, Kate was burnt and dried away, and I expressly am forbid to touch it.
Or it engenders choler, planteth anger. And better 'twere that both of us did fast, since of ourselves are choleric, than feed it with such over-roasted flesh.
But I'm hungry.
Oh, be patient. Tomorrow it shall be mended. And for this night, we'll fast for company.
Oh.
Come, I will bring thee to thy bridal chamber.
Where is he, Curtis?
In her chamber, making a sermon of continency to her. And rails and swears and rates that she, poor soul, knows not which way to stand, to look, to speak. And she sits there as one new risen from a dream. Hey, away, away, for he's coming hither.
Thus have I politically begun my reign, and 'tis my hope to end successfully. To make her come and know her keeper's call. She ate no meat today, nor none shall eat. Last night she slept not, nor tonight she shall not. As with the meat, some undeserved fault I'll find about the making of the bed. And here I'll fling the pillow, there the bolster, this way the coverlet, another way the sheets. Aye, and amid this hurly, I intend that all is done in reverent care of her. And in conclusion, she shall watch all night. And if she chance to nod, I'll rail and brawl and with a clamor keep her still awake. This is a way to kill a wife with kindness. And thus I'll curb her mad and headstrong humor.
I beg you, noble Grumio.
No, forsooth, I dare not for my life.
What? Did he marry me to famish me? I, who never knew how to entreat, nor never needed that I should entreat, am starved for meat, giddy for lack of sleep, with oaths kept waking, with brawling fed. And that which spites me more than all these wants, he does it under name of perfect love. Oh, I prithee, go and get me some repast. I care not what, so it be wholesome food.
What say you to a piece of beef and mustard?
Dish that I do love to feed upon.
Aye, but the mustard is too hot a little.
Why, then, the beef, and let the mustard rest.
Nay, then I will not. You shall have the mustard, or else you get no beef of Grumio.
Then both, or one, or anything thou wilt.
Why, then, the mustard without the beef.
Oh, go, get thee gone, thou false deluding slave. That feeds me with the very name of meat. Sorrow on thee and all the pack of you that triumph thus upon my misery. Go, get thee gone, I say.
How fares my Kate?
Faith, as cold as can be.
Oh, pluck up thy spirits. Look cheerfully upon me. Here, love. Thou seest how diligent I am to dress thy meat myself and bring it thee? I am sure, sweet Kate, this kindness merits thanks. What, not a word?
Nay, then thou lovest it not, and all my pains are sordid to no proof. Here, take away this dish.
Oh, I pray you, let it stand.
The poorest service is repaid with thanks, and so shall mine before you touch the meat.
I thank you, sir.
Ah, then eat apace. And now, my honey love, we will return unto thy father's house and revel it as bravely as the best, with silken coats and caps and golden rings. The tailor now doth stay thy leisure to deck thy body with his treasure. Come, tailor, let us see those ornaments. Lay forth the gown.
Sir.
What news with you, sir?
Here is the cap your worship did bespeak.
Why, this was molded on a porringer, a velvet dish. Fie, fie, 'tis lewd and filthy. Away with it. Come, let me have a bigger.
I'll have no bigger. This doth fit the time, and gentlewomen wear such caps as these.
When you are gentle, you shall have one too, and not till then.
Why, sir, I trust I may have leave to speak. And speak I will. I am no child, no babe. Your betters have endured me, say my mind. And if you cannot, best you stop your ears. My tongue will tell the anger of my heart, or else my heart concealing it will break. And rather than it shall, I will be free even to the uttermost as I please. In words.
Why, thou sayest true. It is a paltry cap, a custard coffin, a bauble, a silken pie. Ah, I love thee well in that thou likest it not.
Love me or love me not, I like the cap, and it I will have, or I will have none.
Then none it is, and now thy gown. Come, tailor, let's see it. Oh, mercy God, what masking stuff is here? What's this, a sleeve? It's like a demi-cannon. Why, what in devil's name, tailor, callest thou this?
I see she's like to have neither cap nor gown.
You bid me make it orderly and well, according to the fashion and the time.
Marry, and I did, but if you be remembered, I did not bid you mar it to the time. I'll none of it. Hence, make your best of it.
I never saw a better fashion gown. More quaint, more pleasing, nor more commendable. Belike you mean to make a puppet of me.
Why, true, he means to make a puppet of thee.
She says your worship means to make a puppet of her.
Oh, monstrous arrogance! Thou liest, thou thread, thou thimble, thou yard, three-quarters, half-yard, quarter, nail! I tell thee, that thou hast marred her gown.
Your worship is deceived. The gown is made just as my master had directed.
Go, take it up unto thy master's use. Rumio, say thou wilt see the tailor paid. Go, take it, hence, be gone, and say no more.
Faith, your worship.
Away, I say, commend me to thy master. Oh, well, now, my Kate, we will unto your father's, even in these honest, mean habiliments. Our purses shall be proud, our garments poor. For 'tis the mind that makes the body rich, and as the sun breaks through the darkest clouds, so honor appeareth in the meanest habit. And therefore, frolic. We will henceforthwith to feast and sport us at thy father's house. Go, call my men, and let us straight to him. Let's see. I think 'tis now some 7 o'clock, and well we may come there by dinner time.
I dare assure you, sir, 'tis almost 2, and 'twill be supper time ere you come there.
It shall be 7 ere I go to horse. Look, what I speak or do or think to do, you are still crossing it. Sirs, let it alone. I will not go today. And ere I do, it shall be what o'clock I say it is. Come on, in God's name, once more toward our fathers. Ah, good Lord, how bright and goodly shines the moon.
The moon? The sun. It is not moonlight now.
I say it is the moon that... shines so bright.
I know it is the sun that shines so bright.
Now, by my mother's sun, and that's myself, it shall be moon or star or what I list, or ere I journey to your father's house. Go on and fetch our horses back again. Evermore crossed and crossed, nothing but crossed.
Good lady, say as he says, we shall never go.
Forward, I pray, since we have come so far, and be it moon or sun or what you please. And if you please to call it a rush candle, henceforth I vow it shall be so for me.
I say it is the moon.
I know it is the moon.
Nay, then you lie. It is the blessed sun.
And God be blessed, it is the blessed sun. But sun it is not when you say it is not. And the moon changes even as your mind. What you will have it named, even that it is. And so it shall be so for Catherine.
Master, go thy way, the field is won.
Well, forward, forward. Thus the bowl should run, and not unluckily against the bias. Ah, but soft, what company is coming here?
There's a man by the look of him.
A man? You lie, sirrah. 'Tis a woman. Good morrow, gentle mistress. Where away?
I am not as you think a woman, sir. I am in faith a man.
Tell me, sweet Kate, and tell me truly, too. Hast thou beheld a fresher gentlewoman? Such war of white and red within her cheeks. Oh. What stars do spangle heaven with such beauty as those two eyes become that heavenly face? Fair, lovely maid, once more good day to thee. Sweet Kate, embrace her for her beauty's sake.
We'll make the man mad to make a woman of him.
Young, budding maiden, fair and fresh and sweet. Whither away? Oh, where is thy abode? Happy the parents of so fair a child. Happier the man whom favorable stars allot thee for his lovely bedfellow.
But how now,
Kate? I hope thou art not mad. This is a man. Oh, wrinkled, faded, withered, and not a maiden as thou sayst to you.
Pardon, old father, my mistaking eyes that have been so bedazzled with the sun that everything I look on seemeth green. Now I perceive thou art a reverend father. Pardon, I pray thee, for my mad mistaking.
Do, good old grandsire, and withal make known which way thou travelest. If along with us, we shall be joyful of thy company.
Fair sir, and you, my merry mistress, that with your strange encounter much amazed me. My name is called Vincentio, my dwelling Pisa, and bound I am to Padua, there to visit a son of mine, which long I have not seen.
What is his name?
Lucentio, gentle sir.
Happily met, the happier for thy son. And now, by law, as well as reverend age, I may entitle thee my loving father. The sister to my wife, this gentlewoman, thy son by this hath married, her name Bianca.
But is this true?
Wonder not, nor be not grieved. She is of good esteem, her dowry wealthy, and of worthy birth. Let me embrace with old Vincentio, and wander we to see thy honest son, who will of thy arrival be full joyous.
But is this true, or is it else your pleasure, like pleasant travelers, to break a jest upon the company you overtake?
I do assure thee, father, so it is.
Well then, to Padua. We may well command our welcome there, and by all likelihood some cheer is toward.
Husband, let's follow to see the end of this ado.
First kiss me, Kate, and we will.
What? In the midst of the street?
What? Art thou ashamed of me?
No, sir. God forbid. But ashamed to kiss.
Why, then, let's home again. Come, sitter, let's away.
Nay, I will give thee a kiss. Now I pray thee, love, stay.
Is not this well? Come, my sweet Kate, to thy sister's and Lucentio's gate.
My fair Bianca, bid my father welcome, while I with self-same kindness welcome thine. Brother Petruchio, Sister Katharina, and thou, Hortensio, with thy loving widow, feast with the best and welcome to my house. My banquet is to close our stomachs up after our great good cheer. Pray you sit down, for now we sit to chat as well as eat.
Nothing but sit and eat and eat.
Padua affords this kindness, son Petruchio.
Padua affords nothing but what is kind.
For both our sakes, I would that word were true.
Oh, now for my life, Hortensio fears his widow.
Then never trust me if I be afeared.
You are very sensible, and yet you miss my sense. I mean, Hortensio is afraid of you.
Oh, he that is giddy thinks the world turns round.
Ah, roundly replied.
Mistress, how mean you that? Thus I conceive by him.
Conceives by me? Oh, how likes Hortensio that?
My widow says thus she conceives her tale.
Very well mended. Kiss him for that, good widow.
He that is giddy thinks the world turns round. I pray you, tell me what you meant by that.
Your husband, being troubled with a shrew, measures my husband's sorrow by his woe. And now you know my meaning.
A very mean meaning.
Right. I mean you.
And I am mean indeed, respecting you.
To her, Kate.
To her, widow.
100 marks. My Kate does put her down.
That's my office.
Spoke like an officer. Here's to thee, lad.
How like you, Graymill, these good wicked folks.
Believe me, sir, they butt together well. Eh, Bianca?
Head and butt. And hasty-witted body would say your head and butt were head and horn.
Mistress Bride, hath that awakened you?
Aye, but not frighted me. Therefore, I'll sleep again.
Nay, that you shall not. Since you have begun, have at you afore a bit of jest or two.
Am I your bird? I mean to shift my bush and then pursue me as you draw your bow. You are welcome all. Let us draw apart, dear ladies, and leave them to their jest.
Oh, Petruchio. Bianca hits you now.
Confess. Did she not hit you here?
Ah, it has a little galled me, I confess. And as the jest did glance away from me, 'tis 10-1 it maimed you two outright.
Now, in good sad goodness, son Petruchio, I think thou hast the very shrew of all.
Well, I say no, and therefore, for assurance, let's each one send unto his wife, and he whose wife is most obedient to come at first when he doth send for her shall win the wager which we will propose.
Content. What is the wager?
20 crowns.
20 crowns? I'll venture so much on my hawk or hound, but 20 times so much upon my wife.
100, then.
Content. A match. 'Tis done. Who shall begin?
That will I. Bid your mistress come to me.
I go.
Son, I'll be your half, Bianca comes.
I'll have no halves. I'll bear it all myself.
Good master.
How now? What news?
Sir, my mistress sends you word that she is busy and she cannot come.
How? She is busy and she cannot come? Is that an answer, Lucentio?
Aye, and a kind one, too. Pray God, sir, your wife sent you not a worse.
I hope better.
Sirrah Biondello, go and entreat my wife to come to me forthwith.
I go, but I like it not.
Oh, entreat her. Nay, then she must needs come.
I am afraid, sir, do what you can. Yours will not be entreated.
Good master.
Now, where's my wife?
She says you have some goodly jest in hand. She will not come. She bids you come to her.
Oh, worse and worse. She will not come. Oh, vile, intolerable, not to be endured. Sirrah Grumio, go to your mistress. Say I command her to come.
He does not bid and treat her beg. He commands. I hope the dame is truly tame.
I know her answer.
What?
She will not. The fouler fortune mine, and there's an end.
Now, by me, holy dame, here comes Katharina.
What is your will, sir, that you send for me?
Where is your sister and Hortensio's wife?
They sit conferring by the parlor fire.
Go, fetch them hither. If they deny to come, swing me them roundly forth unto their husbands. Away, I say, and bring them hither straight.
And that they shall most speedily.
Here is a wonder, if you talk of a wonder.
And so it is. I wonder what it bodes.
Marry, peace it bodes, and love and quiet life, and awful rule and right supremacy. And to be short, what's not that's sweet and happy?
Now, fair befall thee, good Petruchio, the wager thou hast won. And I will add unto their losses 20,000 crowns. Another dowry to another daughter. For she is changed as she had never been.
Nay, I will win my wager better yet, and show more sign of her obedience, her new-built virtue and obedience. Ah, see where she comes and brings your forward wives as prisoners to a womanly persuasion. Catherine, that cap of yours becomes you not. Off with that bauble. Throw it underfoot.
Lord, let me never have a cause to sigh till I be brought to such a silly pass.
Fie, what a foolish duty call you this.
I would your duty were as foolish, too. The wisdom of your duty, fair Bianca, hath cost me 100 crowns in supper time.
The more fool you for laying on me duty.
Catherine, I charge thee, tell these headstrong women what duty they do owe their lords and husbands.
Come, you're mocking. We will have no telling.
Come on, I say, and first begin with her.
She shall not.
I say she shall, and first begin with her.
Fie, woman. Unknit that threatening, unkind brow. And dart not scornful glances from those eyes to wound thy lord, thy king, thy governor. It blots thy beauty as frost do might the meads, confounds thy fame as whirlwinds shake fair buds, and in no sense is meet or amiable. A woman moved is like a fountain troubled, muddy, ill-seeming, thick, bereft of beauty. And while it is so, none so dry or thirsty will deign to sip or touch one drop of it. Thy husband is thy lord, thy life, thy keeper, thy head, thy sovereign, one that cares for thee, and for thy maintenance commits his body to painful labor both by sea and land, to watch the night in storms, the day in cold, whilst thou liest warm at home, secure and safe, and craves no other tribute at thy hands but love, fair looks, and true obedience. Too little payment for so great a debt. Such duty as the subject owes the prince, even such a woman oweth to her husband. When she is froward, peevish, sullen, sour, and not obedient to his honest will, what is she but a foul, contending rebel and graceless traitor to her loving lord? I am ashamed that women are so simple to offer war where they should kneel for peace, or seek for rule, supremacy, and sway when they are bound to serve, love, and obey. Why are our bodies soft and weak and smooth, and apt to toil and trouble in the world, but that our soft conditions and our hearts should well agree with our external parts? Come, come, you froward and unable worms. My mind hath been as big as one of yours. My heart is great. My reason haply more to bandy word for word and frown for frown. But now I see our lances are but straws, our strength as weak, our weakness past compare, that seeming to be most, which we indeed least are.
Why, there's a wench. Come on and kiss me, Kate.
Now go thy ways, Petruchio, for thou hast tamed a cursed shrew.
You have been listening to William Shakespeare's The Taming of the Shrew, adapted for NBC's series of great plays by Randall R. McDougall. Featured in the cast were Grace Coppin as Catherine and Herbert Rudley as Petruchio. The harpsichord music by Sylvia Marlowe, the orchestra conducted by Joseph Stopak. Now here is Barrett H. Clark, who will speak to you briefly about next Sunday's great play. Mr. Clark.
This will be John Galsworthy's tragedy, Justice. We invite you to listen in at the same hour next Sunday.
Great plays are presented as a public service by NBC and the independent radio stations associated with the Blue Network, operated by the National Broadcasting Company.